The Murthy Law Firm has been clarifying U.S. immigration laws and procedures for foreign nationals since 1994. We are happy to offer this free service. Please listen to copyright information and restrictions at the end of this recording.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Murthy Podcast. I'm Maggie Wagner, and I'm joined here with Kevin Andrews. And today we will be talking about the E-1 and E-2 visas. So just to start out, kind of giving an overview, what are the E-1 and E-2 visas, and how does someone qualify for them, Kevin?
Yeah, thanks, Maggie. So E-visas are for foreign businesses from certain countries who need to send foreign national traders or investors to the United States for their business ventures. Both of these visas are based on the existence of a signed international treaty between the U.S. and the applicant's country of nationality. These are called treaties of, quote, freedom, commerce, and navigation, and they are basically a treaty for establishment of trade or commerce. Some countries have allow for only E-1 or E-2, and then some allow for both. And the foreign employer needs to be owned by people, at least 50% owned by people who are nationals of the treaty country. So E-1 and E-2, they're slightly different. E-1 is for applicants who are engaged in substantial trade, could be goods, services, some kind of commercial activity. And that trade is primarily between the United States and the home country. So some kind of international trade, not just national trade. And the E-1 applicant is needed in the U.S. to perform essential skills needed to successfully operate that business. For E-2, these are for applicants who are making a substantial investment in a U.S. enterprise, and the E-2 investor is needed in the U.S. to manage that investment and to, you know, play a significant role in the business venture. Both of these visas are non-immigrant intent visas, so they do need to demonstrate their intent to return to home country when the visas expire.
Okay, thanks for that overview. Just to go a little bit more in depth here, you mentioned substantial trade for E-1s and substantial investment for E-2s. Can you talk a little bit about what substantial trade or investment actually means in this context?
Yeah, definitely. So notably, there's no specific monetary amount for the investment or the trade venture. So, you know, another investor type of immigration benefit is the EB-5 visa that requires a specific amount of money to invest. But that's not the case here. For the traders, you need to demonstrate that the amount of trade that you're going to engage in is sufficient to ensure a continuous flow of international trade between the U.S. and the treaty country. So just a serious enough business venture to establish long-term trade. For the investment visa for E-2, the investment needs to be sufficient enough to fund the business venture. It needs to be substantial. And it needs to be an at-risk, the money needs to actually be at risk and has to be irrevocably committed, which means you can't get your money back if you change your mind. Then the money has been vested in the venture. And notably for the traders, for E-1 traders, you can't use this visa to come to the U.S. to establish trade. There do need to be pre-existing transactions or at least a signed negotiated contract at the time of filing to qualify for the E-1.
Okay, so now that we have, you know, kind of some definitions and an overview of the visas, what are some examples of businesses or investments that would actually qualify here?
Yeah, for E-1, trade can involve goods and services most commonly. Banking, insurance, transportation, technology, or tourism are things mentioned in the examples mentioned in the rules. For example, like an international shipping company that primarily does its business with the United States, the business is primarily between the U.S. and a treaty country, that would definitely qualify. Sometimes, you know, like if there's an international shipping company or some kind of international business venture where the U.S. business is not the primary significant portion of work, but a smaller portion of the business, that's not going to qualify. There does need to be the trade needs to be primarily between the U.S. and the treaty country. And then when we're talking about E2 investments, the qualifying investment can really be for anything, you know, a small, it could be for like a small restaurant, a tech startup, something like that, or really there's no limit to what the venture can be as long as it's a lawful one. As long as the investment itself is substantial and not marginal. So it's something that's going to create jobs. It's a large investment. It's not just a relatively small investment pooled together with other resources. The investor is putting a substantial amount of their own money, is making up a substantial portion of the entire investment needed to make the venture work.
Okay, great. So now that we understand kind of, you know, who would qualify for these visas, I want to know, how long can someone stay on an E1 or E2 visa, and would it be possible for someone to renew the visa?
Yeah, so the initial stay is for 2 years for both visas. That can be renewed in 2-year increments as long as the work is still available. And there, some countries do have a maximum limit. Like some countries have a 5-year maximum. So that's going to be based on a reciprocity with the person's country. And that can, you can see that on the chart with the list of countries that qualify. But many countries have no maximum validity period. So this could be a pretty flexible work authorization option. Again, you do need to show that you have non-immigrant intent. So for those wanting to pursue a green card journey at some point, they may want to transition out of this type of visa type as they start to pursue that. But for those not involved in green card cases, this can be a relatively long-term work authorization option in the United States.
Great. So kind of more on that, you know, comparing these to other U.S. work visas, what might be some things that are beneficial to someone who's seeking E2 status as opposed to seeking another form of work authorization?
Right. So, you know, just like other work visa options, there's pros and cons. You know, the most common probably work visa is the H-1B visa, but unlike, there's no annual cap and there's no lottery for E-1 and E-2. You can just apply if you qualify, whereas, as people know, there's a lottery associated with most H-1Bs. The E-visas could be more flexible work option for different business ventures. So, for example, there's no physical office space requirement for an E-visa, maybe unlike the H visas, because the Department of Labor tracks the salary for those kinds of visas. You know, L1s are a little bit more flexible than H's, but they're specific to intracompany transferees, whereas an E1 and E2 allow for more independent business activities, not just employment in a particular type of occupation. But the E-visas do have non-immigrant intent. Or you need to demonstrate non-immigrant intent with the E-visas. There's no dual intent like there is for H's and L's. And I guess the most obvious thing is like, well, what if I'm not a national a country on that list? But, you know, what is sort of hopeful here is it's not based on country of birth. It's based on country of nationality. So, you know, there are people who can get citizenship in one of these countries and maybe use that as a way to obtain the E-visa to come to the United States. Now, changing your nationality is not going to change how long it takes to get a green card in the United States, since that's tied to where you're born, but you could expand your non-immigrant work visa options. You know, we do a lot of E3, we didn't talk about E3, but E3 is basically a specialty occupation H1 type of visa for people from Australia, and that's just a specific treaty that the Australians negotiated with the Americans once upon a time. And this applies to Australian nationals, not just Australian people who are born in Australia. So these other non-immigrant visa options that have a nationality requirement, that's obviously a barrier, but it's not an impossible barrier to overcome, since, you know, we can't change where we're born, but we can change what nationality we are. So this could be for some people, maybe a more flexible option than maybe an L1 that requires working at a foreign company for a really long time, or an H1 that requires a lottery number that you're unable to obtain for whatever reason.
Right. And there was a policy update, you know, regarding changing your citizenship in order to qualify for one of these visas. So if you are looking to maybe do something like that, it would be a good idea to reach out to an immigration attorney before making any big decisions like that. But that's a great point that it's, you know, it's not country of birth, it's country of citizenship. So thanks for taking the time to talk with us today, and I hope everyone has a better understanding of the E1 and E2 visas and the options that are out there, and we will look forward to talking with you guys next time. Thanks.
This is a free service. The content is the protected, copyrighted property of the Murthy Law Firm. Unauthorized recording or dissemination of these materials without prior permission is prohibited by law. Learn about our firm, how to engage our services, and more at www.murthy.com.